My name is Kyle Brooks, and today's sermon is brought to you by Jesus the Christ. I didn't really have to write this. It's beautiful. Like, you know, you get into scripture and you suddenly realize there are all these sort of profound and amazing things that are already written. And we are charged sometimes with the responsibility of passing that on. So I have the privilege today of passing on this message of a firm foundation. So I'm going to start with the bad news. Things fall apart. It's inevitable. We live in a world where permanence is not expected. Cars break down over time. Your clothes and shoes get worn out. Even our bodies change over time. They don't do what they used to. Now, what do all these things have in common? All the things I just listed are physical things, okay? They're not built to last forever. And we can't place all of our hope in things that are temporary. We need something strong and lasting. In the previous week, Josh talked about being a friend of Jesus. That's something that's powerful, it's real, it's strong. And it's something that can withstand the pressures of this world. It's a relationship that endures and doesn't fall apart over time. And today, I want to push us a little further to think about how we build and maintain that kind of relationship with Jesus. Now, when I think about the idea of being built to last, I think of San Francisco, California. San Francisco, California is one of the most earthquake-prone cities in the entire world. Now, unfortunately, it wasn't always built the way it was built today. In 1906, there was an earthquake and a fire of epic proportions. That was the city of San Francisco in 1906, after a massive earthquake and a fire. I'm told that on the Richter scale, it's a scale from, I think, about, I don't know if it's 0 to 10 or 1 to 10, but either way, the magnitude of the earthquake was 7.9. Now, if, you know, you're in school, a 7.9 out of 10 is a C+. But clearly, it doesn't take an A effort to cause a lot of damage. So clearly, a few things went wrong. The death toll was over 3,000, and the damage was estimated to cost about $500 million in 1906 dollars. So that means several billions in our money today, okay? And it was comparable in scale to the expense of Hurricane Katrina's impact on New Orleans. Now, after this event had occurred, the city officials drew up plans to make their city more resistant to future earthquakes. And even now, skyscrapers in San Francisco are specially built to respond to these sorts of events. Now, how do you build skyscrapers to resist natural disasters? You need the right materials. Skyscrapers are usually made of steel and other metals mixed together. Okay, it's what we call an alloy. It makes a strong frame that can stand up to a lot of tension. You don't want the kind of materials that break under pressure, so you're not going to see a lot of glass, a lot of brick used to construct a skyscraper. A building of this magnitude requires a lot of physical labor, and it requires the right tools. Most importantly, you need a good foundation. And many of these buildings have special coils, special springs in their foundation that allows them to move when the earthquake happens. It allows them to sway, and these buildings are built to last. And in the words of our text today, Jesus is giving the possibility of something even more lasting and more secure. And so we come to Matthew chapter 7, verses 24 through 29. And it says, "Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down and the streams rose and the winds blew and beat against that house, yet it did not fall because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash." When Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching because he taught as one who had authority and not as their teachers of the law. Now, let's put this in context. Jesus, in this text, is talking about a foundation. And this particular piece of text comes at the end of what is known as the Sermon on the Mount. The Sermon on the Mount is kind of this nice collection and summary of Jesus' teachings. It captures so much of what Jesus was trying to say to his disciples, to his followers, and to us today. And I like to think of Jesus giving the Sermon on the Mount, I think of him as a divine architect, laying out the blueprints of a relationship with God and presenting these plans to his disciples, to his followers. He's laying out plans for a church that will be built when he leaves. And this makes perfect sense. A couple of things to keep in mind. Jesus' earthly father was a carpenter. So obviously Jesus would know a little something about building. He would know something about the practical aspects of putting together a structure. And he was speaking the truth through an example that he knew very well, building a house. So Jesus is not going for some huge crazy metaphor. He's talking about something that's very practical, something that's very common and familiar to him, and something that these people can grasp onto quite easily. Another thing to think about. Rabbis at this time were required to have another profession. So they had to have some sort of practical knowledge, some practical skill outside of just teaching and preaching. So Jesus would have had some other things going on besides just talking to people about the kingdom of God. He had practical skills that could be applied, that could be used in this world. Another thing to think about, if you know anything about the landscape of Palestine, and here's a little nice little picture of Jesus giving the Sermon on the Mount. I can't say it happened exactly like that, but I happen to like this picture. And you see the nice little halo going on. It's pretty nice. If you know anything about Palestine, which Jesus would, you know there's a lot of sand. Sand everywhere. Now think about it. If there's sand everywhere, it's pretty easy to build your house on sand. Doesn't require a lot of effort, doesn't require a lot of forethought. You just say, hey, I'm standing on sand, I'm going to build right here. It's easy. Just because something is easy doesn't mean it's worthwhile. And Jesus is asking for something different, something that might require more than just minimal effort. And so, if you're thinking about looking for rock in a place that's covered with sand, you might have to dig a little bit. You might have to get further beneath the surface. You may have to put in some work to get to that foundation, but once you get to that foundation, you're ready to build. You found a place where you can be firm and secure. And Jesus is asking us to push aside distractions and diversions in order to find the way. And Jesus is asking us to build a solid life, not a sandcastle. Something that does not wash away when storms of life come through. Let's think about the criteria Jesus is putting in place for building a solid relationship. In that first verse, he says, "Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock." There are a couple of things that jump out for me from this particular text. Puts them into practice and hears. There's something profound in those two statements. I feel like Jesus is making two powerful statements here. First, building a firm foundation requires listening. You have to hear what Jesus is saying. In Jesus' sermon, it starts in chapter 5 and continues through chapter 7. And in this whole sermon, Jesus is giving insight. He's giving instruction on how to live, how to build a life that reflects God's influence and presence. And it's important that we're listening and actually absorbing Jesus' teaching. So this is a very practical instruction. The next thing, he says, building a firm foundation requires doing. Now, I'm in divinity school. I'm well aware that the Bible can be read and analyzed from a million different angles, but if it's not applied to your life, it's just words in a book. There are people who know a lot more about the Bible than I do, but the Bible is not actually active in their lives. It means something when we begin to do this thing we have heard, this thing we have internalized. And we have to get to a point where knowledge becomes action, where theory becomes practice. It's not enough to just talk about it. It sounds nice, it sounds good, but what do we do with it? Jesus is saying, let's do something with this. He's giving the blueprints of a Christian life, and we must use them to build the Christian life. And it's not enough to just know Jesus said good things. We have to take what he said and use those things to cause change in our lives and in this world. And when listening and doing come together, we get something wonderful called obedience. Listening plus doing creates obedience. So what Jesus is saying here is we must obey what he is teaching in order to experience the solid, secure relationship he has in mind. But what are we supposed to be obedient to? In this verse, Jesus makes the point of saying these words of mine. If we go back to chapter 5 and chapter 6 and the beginning of chapter 7, we see things that Jesus is laying out. And it would take far too much time to go through all of them today, but I encourage you to look at them and to think about what Jesus is saying. So, in Matthew chapter 5, verses 13 through 16, Jesus explains our role in the world. He says, we are the salt of the earth. We are like a city on a hill that cannot be hidden. We are the light of the world. So Jesus is giving instruction about our role in this world. In chapter 6, verses 19 through 15, Jesus teaches his disciples to pray what is commonly known as the Lord's Prayer. He's giving instruction for divine communication. He's saying, this is the way you come to God, our Father. So he's setting up a few things. He's setting up a role. He's setting up a mindset. He's setting up a part to play. Then he's teaching them how to communicate with God while they are playing this role. And then further in chapter 6, Jesus teaches us how to overcome our worries. So there's some powerful things happening here. We have a role. We have an identity that is established. We have a way of communicating with God as we work through this identity, as we live this life. And then we have an instruction for finding a new kind of peace. So Jesus teaches us how to overcome worry, which is teaching us how to find peace. So these are just a few of the profound lessons Jesus is offering. But in just these passages, we find instructions on how to live for God, how to communicate with God, and how to access the peace of God. And these pieces are critical to building a firm foundation, a firm relationship with God. And they require obedience. Why is obedience so important? Jesus makes it necessarily clear why obedience is important, because storms are coming and you will get rained on. A while back, I was talking about San Francisco. I was talking about the buildings there. And in San Francisco, they don't build earthquake-proof skyscrapers just for the sake of saying that an earthquake might come. They build them because they know earthquakes are coming. It is not an in case of earthquake plan. It is a because of earthquake plan. So there's something here that is guaranteed, and we know it's going to happen. How do they know? Well, let me tell you how they know. It's a little thing called the San Andreas Fault. California has a big crack running up the side of it. It's called the San Andreas Fault, which is a proper name because it is San Andreas's fault. This is why so many earthquakes happen in California. It's a big crack in the ground, and when the crack starts moving, guess what? Things start shaking. This is not a surprise. This has been known for some time. So there's a shifting that happens here in this crack. And this is a fitting image for us. Why? There are so many things in this world that threaten to tear us down and attack the deep, firm foundation Jesus hopes to establish in our lives. There are so many temptations to cause us to stray away from our time of prayer and our time of worshiping God. There are challenges to our faith and our beliefs. There are life circumstances that change and that cause us to lose our grip on the hope Jesus has given us. And for each of us, that storm might be different. For some of us, it might be financial struggles. It might be battles with your family. It could be any number of things, but I believe these storms of life offer us a reason to hold on to the foundation in Jesus that much more tightly. And when I find myself struggling to make it through a day, I can close my eyes and pray for the strength and comfort Jesus has promised us. I can remind myself of the promises of the scriptures and know that even though I may weep now, there will be joy when I pass through the storm. Jesus makes it clear there will be consequences if all we do is hear the words but never put them to use. He says in verses 26 and 27, "Everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house, and it fell with a great crash." Something important to note here. Both the wise and the foolish person built houses. Each and every one of us is building a life. We are building a foundation. We are setting in roots. We are creating something out of this time we have been given. But everyone's not building the same way. Jesus makes it clear that the foundation we build on is of our choosing. We can build on rock or we can build on sand. He makes it clear every house will face the rains, the floods, and the winds. Here's the thing. Everybody doesn't have storm insurance. Everybody's got a house, but everybody doesn't have insurance. Jesus, through his instructions, is preparing us for difficulties that lie ahead. Jesus knew his disciples would face incredible opposition as they sought to spread the message of a radically changed life in God. And he wanted to prepare them for the storm, and he is doing the same thing for us. Jesus could say these things because he spoke with the type of power and authority that people were not used to. It says, when Jesus had finished saying these things, the crowds were amazed at his teaching because he taught as one who had authority and not as their teachers of the law. As something to think about, the people who were teachers of the law did not carry the same authority and presence as Jesus did in this sermon. You have to ask yourself, what were these teachers doing that undercut their authority? One way we undercut the authority of our words is when we do not live by them. To simply listen to what Jesus has said and not to put it into practice causes people to wonder, what's the point of listening if I do nothing with it? Jesus is calling them to do something with what they have heard, and they are recognizing the presence and authority with which he has said that. Why? Because Jesus was living this out. Jesus was an example of a life that was grounded and rooted in God. A life that was not all about signs and wonders, but was about relationship, about something that can stand up to the challenges. Jesus had a lot of challenges in his life. He was betrayed by those who were close to him. He faced death. He faced all sorts of persecution. He faced threats on his life. He knew there would be difficulties ahead. And yet, the image that stands with me, I think of the image of Jesus praying in the Garden of Gethsemane. He's praying so vigorously, so hard that sweat like drops of blood is coming down his forehead. Imagine this imagery. He is so taxed. He is so stressed. He is at this point where he is feeling broken. He is feeling weak. He is saying, God, if it is your will, let this pass from me. Do not let me have to endure this. And yet, God endowed him with the strength to endure, the strength to withstand the storms that would come against him. When I think about storms, I think about places in my life where I recognize and I remember having to lean upon God wholeheartedly. 2008 was probably one of the hardest years of my life. It was a year of storms that challenged my foundation profoundly. I was a young campus minister. I was trying to figure out how to balance meeting the needs of people while also keeping some sense of self. How to meet the needs, the longings I felt in my heart, recognizing I had to be strong for other people. I was finishing up my master's program. I was student teaching. I was dealing with this profound stress. I was thinking to myself, God, how do I deal with other people's children? How do I find a way to teach them, to reach them in a place of understanding, to connect with them in a way that will help them to see this important lesson? In the middle of all that stress and strain, I got word that my father passed. And so I had to drop everything. I went home for 2 weeks. I was dealing with family strife, dealing with all sorts of things that had gone unnoticed and untalked about for so long. All these storms. I felt the constant pressure of trying to be a first-year teacher in the school system of New Haven Public Schools. I felt as if everything I had invested in was falling apart and crumbling. I said, God, I'm trying to hold it together and it's not working. I had a relationship fall apart. I really thought like, wow, God, this is it. Like, this is great. This is awesome. This person is right and this is the right time in my life. Things are just clicking. And then it didn't. And I began to question God. I said, God, why is this so hard? Why is it so difficult just to stand up, just to get through another day? Why, when I feel like I did everything you asked me to do, why is this still so hard? And it was in that dark hour that God spoke something very, very clear to me. God said to me, you are so busy looking at the signs, you forgot about my directions. If all I could see was the damage being inflicted by the storms, I couldn't remember the fact that God had already given me a way to withstand them. Understand something. When storms happen, you are going to undergo damage. Storms are going to come. It is a fact of life. The question is, how will we deal with storms? How will we manage storms? How will we find a way to do the work that Jesus has charged us with? As Christians, we are called to be builders of the kingdom of God. As we build lives of love, truth, and justice on the foundation of Jesus Christ, we become dwellings of God's presence. And anyone who has ever owned a home will tell you, it's one thing to own a home, it's another to maintain it. The work doesn't stop when you get the house. It begins. And when we begin to establish this relationship with Jesus, that's when the work starts. It's not over then. No, we have to maintain. We have to continually connect. We have to build. We have to plug into community. We have to find ways to always remember and be mindful of the work that we must do. If we have built on a firm foundation, we cannot afford to let that foundation slip. It requires faithful attention and continual effort. And this is hard work. The work Jesus is calling us to do is building and maintenance. And so at the core, there's this. Jesus is our lasting, permanent foundation, a foundation we can build on. And I would urge us to resist the temptation to build where it is easy and instead build where it is secure. I encourage us all to dig deeper, to remember that building a relationship with Jesus is an everyday endeavor, an everyday task. I encourage us to dig through the sand to find the rock. Don't let the sand cover up what Jesus has hidden deep inside of us. An opening, an entryway, a path to God. So let us bear that in mind, a firm foundation. Jesus has laid out the plan, and the firm foundation is here for us. But are we willing to build? And are we willing to stand through the storm? I pray that we are. In this time, we're going to transition into a time of communion. And something that strikes me so powerfully about the time of communion, about the broken body of Jesus, about the shed blood of Jesus. We remember the sacrifice Jesus made to be our rock, to be our foundation. And these are the ideas we must keep in mind as we sacrifice, as we build, as we struggle, as we labor. Jesus did not leave us alone. Jesus did not leave us without support, without concern, without care. Jesus has given us the tools we need to survive and to thrive.